everyone, and welcome to another episode of Le Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Stu Hardy, joined as always by Derek Bassett, and for this special episode, we have not one but two guests. We have Tim Matthews and Jamie Cudmore, the respective leader of the Arrows Academy and the head coach of the Arrows Academy. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us this evening.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Likewise, boys, good to see you again.
Great to have you back. And that said, normally when we have guests on the podcast, we'll ask them, you know, questions of how they got into rugby. But the great thing about Jamie and Tim is this is their second appearance. They've already been on. They've already answered those questions. And if you want to find out more about that episode with Jamie, that was episode 46. And our episode featuring Tim was episode 157. And if you're watching on YouTube, those episodes are in the description below. But Tim, we're going to start with you because, you know, last time we interviewed you, you were involved with the Toronto Arrows. Unfortunately, they're no longer with us. When we've had other players on, such as Lucas Rumble or Mitch Richardson, they told us that you were the person that reached out and informed them of the unfortunate end of the team. So we've had the player perspective, but from the background perspective, how did things unfold for you?
Yeah, it's you're taking me back. It feels like a lifetime ago, even though it wasn't that long ago. So what I can say is that, you know, from Bill's passing until the unfortunate announcement or the call had to be made about, you know, not playing in the MLR, there wasn't a lot of time, you know, to work through things. And then ultimately, you know, what I would say is that at every stage, we tried to make sure that we gave it everything we could to see through a season, to make a season possible. But when it got to a point where we were going to begin making commitments that couldn't be unwound, we knew that we had to make a call just so that we could make sure that we did everything we could to do right by the players, the coaches, the front office staff, the fans. And now I know that some folks will hear that and say, well, how could you have signed the players? Like, isn't that the biggest commitment? But most folks who are sort of in on the inside would know that the vast majority of those signings happened in the summertime before Bill's passing. So I appreciate that the optics would have been a little bit confusing for folks, similar to the rebranding. But trust me, that was, you know, the last big project that we worked on with Bill. So all of those things had been set in motion well in advance. But it was it goes without saying, a very challenging time. And, you know, the analogy that I've used is we knew that the plane was going down, and the work for us was to make sure that we gave everybody, as many people as possible, a parachute as early as possible, and tried to land it as gently as possible. I'm not sure what else I could say about that period.
Yeah, and Jamie, a similar question, and then we'll get into some positivity on how we're all building coming out of this. But like, you obviously kind of very recently joined the Arrows organization, kind of after the MLR season, became the new head coach of the academy. How did that kind of, like, the news of the big MLR club folding, kind of how did that impact like what you were doing, what you were building or planning on building, like, with the Arrows Academy?
I think as Tim said, everybody was in trying to do as best we could and get as soft a landing as possible for everybody involved. For us to try to keep the academy going is what we ultimately managed to do, because, you know, we've got a lot of kids who have high potential, and they need opportunities to play. A really, really devastating, decision to have to close shop, as it were. But the fact that we managed to kind of regroup and keep things going as best we can is a positive out of a situation that was very, very complicated.
So I guess the obvious follow-up question to both those answers, and maybe you guys can maybe kind of divide and conquer the question as a whole where you see fit. But obviously the academy is continuing. So I guess the big question just is, How is the academy continuing? What is kind of your plans? Like, you guys are obviously still using like the Toronto Arrows. Like, Jamie, you're wearing an Arrows shirt right now. Tim, you got the Arrows hat behind you. Still called the Arrows Academy, using all the branding and stuff. So like, how was the acad is the academy, I guess, able to continue on? Do you guys still like, even like sim even the simple things, like, do you guys still own like the trademarks and the abilities to use like the Arrows logos and stuff like that? How has all of that shaped up since the MLR team folded? And like, what was your process? I know this is a big question, but what was your like the process of continuing on the academy to the point where you guys are gearing up to play a game this weekend?
Yeah. So Derek, I think you hit the point there. It's complicated is the short answer. But I would say that it's fundamentally based in goodwill and good faith that we're just trying to keep a net positive program running in the future. Like Jamie said, there's still athletes with high potential that are looking for more. It's with Jamie and some of the other coaches, there was high caliber coaches that were around. And so we really just sort of changed gears into figure it out mode. How could we make this happen? But I think a big part of that as well is us working in collaboration. You would have seen the press release around us working with Rugby Ontario to sort of say, look, we all know this. There's a gap with senior men's high performance programming. So what can we do together? Naming rights, I think, is probably a little more along the lines of just making sure everybody knows who it is who's trying to drive this, and we're just working together. But it's effectively the same folks with similar logos, but in a different sort of technical format, but running a program. As you say, we've got a game this Saturday and building toward the Coast to Coast Cup. I think that's the big piece that Jamie and I really focused in on when, we saw the direction that things were headed is we had some really big plans for the Academy in 2024. And we wanted to see as much of that through as possible, and in some ways had to get creative, but as I say, just really change gears into figure it out mode. And here we are still, I would say, admittedly, building the plane while we're in the air, but just trying to make sure that this program is able to run.
All right. Well, one thing that we've noticed from the Academy and from that press release is that a name that's pretty familiar to the Arrows from last season has joined the coaching staff, and that's Noel Reid, who is the IRFU certified coach, World Rugby Level 2 coach. Now, obviously, he was signed as a player for the 2024 season as well. So, was it always the intention of bringing him into the fold? And Jamie, have you found working with Noel so far?
Well, to start off, having Noel with a huge amount of playing experience has been great. And helping him in the transition, going from playing at a very high level to then coaching at a high level, it's something that is not easy to do. And I think the fact that we've managed to keep the academy going and he can get his feet wet, kind of step by step in that transition, I think is going to really help bode well for him for the future. I had a different experience where I went from being a kind of a player coach role directly into coaching in the top 14, which was a huge learning curve, basically vertical. And it probably it maybe put me back a couple of years because you don't go from playing at the highest level to coaching at the highest level. It doesn't happen. You need time to develop. And even though, for my case, I was coaching at the espoir level for years before that. Once you're in the shop window, any mistakes are highlighted very quickly. So, I think he's definitely finding his feet very quickly with us, with the academy. All the boys have been extremely receptive to his language and his coaching style. We've got very, very high standards, but we also understand that, the boys need to learn and we need to create good foundations. And that's what we've been doing since early 2024. And having Noel and then Shane from last year, Shane Cahill, our strength and conditioning lead, creates some continuity from previous structure, and then building forward with other coaches as well. Will Kelly, who was with the Arrows, and then with me in the Pride, and kind of building that coaching group as well as building the academy group is I think really, really important if we want to build this academy up to what we think for the long term.
And sort of just in case there's any questions around sort of the plan for Noel in this season, it wasn't a Reg Dunlop type circumstance that was being contemplated, but certainly there were conversations about helping him transition from playing into coaching. So admittedly, I think that was accelerated, but it wasn't something that we hadn't discussed previously. Yeah.
I absolutely love the Slapshot reference being thrown in there, though. So that was perfect. I really enjoyed that. I did kind of have a sort of, I guess, like slightly tangential kind of question based on that, though. I know, Jamie, I know you just kind of mentioned that we need the Arrows Academy and the partnership with Rugby Ontario to help fill that gap with like elite high performance rugby within Ontario. And I was just kind of wondering, like, how do you guys feel like coaching also kind of plays a factor into that? Because over the past couple of months, like we've seen, various clubs across Ontario or universities have been announcing like on social media that have like former Arrows becoming coaches with their staff. And like Mac has a couple guys, like Sam Malcolm's coaching within Ontario. Jack McRogers is still, as part of a coaching staff at, clubs across Ontario. So it's like, how do you guys kind of see how, like, I guess as you're developing, say, high performance players, or even the impact that having an MLR team in a city can also kind of have. Now that we're seeing like a lot of these guys that have played professional rugby or high performance rugby also transitioning into coaching roles within Ontario.
Yeah, so I'll maybe take that one, Tim. Kind of a piece away from the academy that I've been doing is been coaching coaches across Canada, not only Southern Ontario, but from the east to west coast. And it's outstanding for us to have guys who have played at a very high level, but now want to give back to the game. And then, supporting them through their transition into coaching at whether it be at club, whether it be at university, whether it be at college, is hugely positive because we're all connected from, through the Arrows. So we've got these kind of synergies between the foundations that we lay out, the style of play that we want to play, games-based training, so that, kids are getting fitness, they're getting cohesion, and then ultimately they're having fun because as we all know, if we're not having fun, we're not going to keep playing the game. And then, they're obviously extremely competitive, so that just heightens the level across the board. And ultimately, we're trying to grow the game and build the game here in Canada. And the quickest way to do that is upskill coaches because they have, that information to disseminate off to their players and hopefully be successful. And then just you keep growing, right? You got more cows, more milk, more cream, and hopefully everything starts going forward.
Cream of the crop rises to the top.
Are you able to kind of elaborate a little bit more on like when you say like you're coaching coaches, like what are those kind of programs like looking like that you're running right now?
So I've done various different coach development basically days where we'll have coaches come in, we go through different foundational practices on attack, defense, practice planning, and then we're directly with the players afterwards. We did this in the fall with the interbranch combines that we ran in the four different interbranches around Southern Ontario, and from that we had combines in behind it, so we had athletes testing, and it was the coaches that nominated the athletes in their area. So the coaches got a morning of professional development. Then we saw the athletes that they had promoted in the afternoon for some testing and some games-based stuff, some skill stuff. Bronco, a bit of a counter movement jump and some sprints. So now we understand, where these coaches are at in terms of their game IQ and how they can then transfer that knowledge to the kids. And then when we're with the kids in the afternoon, we pushed all those coaches out to, try this new knowledge out or continue to build with the kids that they had promoted. And it was hugely positive experience. And that's allowed us to kind of branch out more across the country, or sorry, the province, and then the country at large, and just kind of build that vivier of coaches so that we can continue to grow the game.
Yeah, so obviously that sounds like a pretty like collaborative process with a lot of the the coaches around Ontario. Like how like because obviously you guys got to do like a bit of recruiting and stuff. I know some guys that are on the academy were probably part of it last year as well. But like how big of a role do like the local club coaches play in, as you said, kind of like helping to like identify players that might be a fit for the Arrows Academy, or trying to make that jump into a more high performance elite level of rugby?
Oh, I think they take a huge role there. Previously it was very university athlete based, and I think that's we're doing a disservice to the kids across the province and across the country, because not everybody goes to school, not everybody has the atypical kind of high school university job life plan. Guys are they drop out of school, but they're still playing rugby. They're maybe doing a trade. They're maybe in college. Maybe they are in university. Regardless of where they're from, if we have a good network of coaches around the area and they promote players because maybe they have speed, size, or skill, or they have some type of maybe X factor, grit. Those are pieces that we need to know about, and then get them in our environment and build together. Or if not, we've already been out with those coaches, so we're all building off the same foundations. And then when we do manage to come together, whether it be for interbranch rugby, whether it be for academy games, whether it be for Ontario under-19s, we're all kind of working off the same foundational playbook. And it just allows everything to be vertically integrated. And when they do come together for those weekend camps in the summer, or maybe some winter stuff that we're hopefully having in the fall and into Christmas, everybody knows what we're talking about when they show up. We're not reteaching people because we don't have very much time and it's a lot of distance. These things at the very beginning, we can start working on tactical understanding and games-based understanding, so we're more successful on game day.
Okay, so we have this new competition across the East Coast titled the East Coast Rugby Championship, and it involves five Canadian teams and New England. We'll get to them later, but how did this competition come about to begin with?
I think it was a fairly organic process, truthfully. There's programs that are popping up. You'll see from the different teams that are in it, as well as the Coast to Coast Cup, which I'm sure we'll talk about as well. But some are provincial teams, some are regional teams, some are academies. They're ultimately just clubs and players and programs that are looking for additional competition. So what used to be sort of, you give us a game, we'll give you a game. You do a home and home type thing. If there's enough programs doing that, you can pull it together, put some structure around it. And in the age of social media, you can get some fans and you can get some views on this and give aspiring athletes, but also the ones in the programs, something with just a little bit more substance than clubs, sort of that heightened level, and try and put some energy behind it. The last piece I would add as well is, Stu, we're going to get to it in terms of New England and the MLR academies, but, I'm not sure the last time was you tried to fly across the country and what you saw the plane ticket price and try and think about flying an entire squad across the country. It's the economics are very difficult to pull off things like historical structures like the CRCs. So the ability to get in a car, a van, or even a bus to get some high quality competition is one that's more appealing perhaps than it was in the past. And one of the things that we talk about is, maybe a little more north-south, finding higher level competition games isn't the worst thing in the world, because east-west is pretty expensive and hard to pull off.
Yeah. I guess a part of, maybe a little follow-up to that, Tim, but you kind of mentioned it, that there has been a handful of other high performance programs that have been popping up in the last couple of years, such as the Atlantic Privateers, who you guys are playing on Saturday, but also like the Vancouver Highlanders back out on the West Coast. And, it seems like every now and then you hear news of a couple more kind of popping up. Is there kind of a sense of the Canadian rugby community kind of identifying maybe a little bit of a gap that's been in Canadian rugby for the past couple of years, and how that and like kind of everyone seems to be, having like a couple different philosophies, but all trying to start, various different types of like regionalized high performance programs to kind of maybe build some sort of, I guess, maybe like an elite competition, but also find a way to get those more like more game time, more development for the players. So I guess the question basically just kind of sums up is like, are people kind of viewing that there's a gap that now teams seem to kind of be stepping up to kind of fill within the Canadian high performance rugby structure?
Yeah, I think so. And the other piece too is I think it's taking some lessons from the past where, fully subsidized or fully pay-to-play programs can fall off, with decisions here and there. The attempt to stand up sustainable programs that have local roots and local support that can weather sort of changes in, at different levels, but still ultimately provide a consistent, repeatable program and a pathway for kids and in a lot of cases, parents and families to get behind is incredibly important. So yeah, I think it's just a little bit of, we know what works for us. Look, I mean, I played in the Super League 20 years ago and it was awesome, but it wasn't economically sustainable, and that's why it fell off. So I think you are finding local solutions that work for the area. They're all pretty similar, but they're also nuanced for their local area, depending on the club season and the school seasons and local community support, but I see it ultimately as net positive because they're coming from a place where they are aiming for sustainability rather than fully subsidized programs.
Yeah, so I did mention earlier about like New England and including like MLR academies. Obviously, it's easier to work with six teams than add, say, other MLR academies such as DC's Academy, Young Glory, which I think is an excellent name for them to choose. But one of the games that you're playing, incidentally, against the New England Academy is going to be held in Syracuse in New York. And now, my geography isn't great, but that's in neither Ontario or New England. I can understand looking at it on a map, it is basically the midpoint between both. So I think that may be the reason why it was chosen. But was that like an agreement you the team made with New England? Or is it another means of exposing rugby in these environments that potentially can gain more fans going forward?
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of both, but it would be, insincere if I didn't say that yes, it being in the middle makes sense for both clubs to get there. Syracuse also does have a good, strong program that they're building and investing in. I would sort of posit that that area of New York State is sort of, a growing rugby population and has a strong local sort of support for the game. So that made sense as well. The other piece that I would add is that part of our collaboration with Rugby Ontario is that in our build up to Coast Cup, we are going to have sort of an Eastern and a Western side that build up to a selection game. So for us, it even makes more sense if you think about the bulk of the team that'll be playing in that game will be coming from Ottawa and Kingston area, right? So I look, we would love to play in front of home fans either here or there. They put on a great show every time they play a curtain raiser. We'd love to do the same here. But for this year, it just made sense on those fronts for us to play in Syracuse. But it's not because we don't think about playing in front of home fans. There's just other things that we have to factor in.
Well, I mean, we can kind of segue into that a little bit. You guys obviously have a game against the Atlantic Privateers this weekend. So like how excited are you to kind of, I guess, get the first kind of Arrows Academy in this sort of new era of the organization, get it off, and can you give out some like I guess a couple like details on the game and like if people have to like buy tickets or if you can just show up, things like that. But like just kind of what you guys got going on this weekend.
Yeah, I'll talk from the logistical side, and then Jamie can talk about the squad and the buildup because we put in quite a bit of work here to get the team to where it is heading into this weekend. Look, from our perspective, with this is the last year of Fletcher's Fields, but it also means that there hasn't been a ton of meaningful rugby played in sort of Toronto proper, other than York Lions, and it's been a while since there's been a game at BMO, those kind of things. So that plus Crescent School has made a significant investment and sort of commitment to their rugby program. They've been good partners. We thought it'd be a great opportunity to play a game, you know, in the heart of Toronto. It is, unfortunately, the kickoff weekend for the Marshall division here. But what isn't kicking off is the junior rugby. So what we've done is we've reached out to the junior clubs in the area. It's free admission. There's going to be music. We want to create a fun environment for them to come up. And a big part of what we talk about is give those kids something to see that, you know, that they wouldn't have, they wouldn't see otherwise, that there's a game to be played at a higher level that can be played locally. But also parents to see that there's something there, something for them to aspire to. But anyway, you know, long story short, we're going to kick off at 2 p.m. We're going to get as many junior kids up there as we can as possible to have a fun environment. Hopefully the weather, you know, cooperates with us here. The Privateers are a great side. We're looking forward to having them here. And we'll just have some fun and try and put on a good display of rugby for the community.
That's definitely what, you know, on the playing side, we're extremely excited about is, you know, getting our guys out in front of, you know, a few more fans than we've had over the last few weeks with our two warm-up games. We played against Balmy Beach a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it was a good first hit out, even though we had a major downpour for mm-hmm. most of the game, and it was more kind of a scenario based you know, kind of combined training with Balmy Beach, and then last week we went to through 2 30-minute halves with Brantford Harlequins. And then we added on a little 15-minute piece at the end because a few of our younger guys needed a bit more time. So we're extremely excited to actually get to, you know, down to the nitty gritty of like proper competition. You know, it's been great. You know, as Tim said, we've had built the West and the Eastern group because since the beginning, we've had about, you know, 200 kids under our control during various times. And we've said at the beginning with the arrows going under, we had to provide something for these kids. So that's where we're at. We're finally, you know, we've got to the point where these guys can get out on the field. And basically what we're trying to do is we're proposing a better level of competition up and above club competition. You know, this is what's so exciting. You know, It's been a bumpy ride, as Tim said, but we've managed to get to the point where we're finally having some meaningful games in front of fans, and hopefully, as we said, we have a great fun environment. You know, there'll be food trucks, there'll be some music, tons of kids running around, and you know, after the game, obviously everybody's going to be on the field, and hopefully there's some photos, some autographs, and we create a real buzz for those kids that are there. And then, you know, year after year, it just keeps growing.
So you're mentioning the East and West groups, and it's also mentioned in the press release that you've got a three-phase plan, and phase one includes the game against the Atlantic Privateers, as well as the East Coast Rugby Championship, and that phase two, you'll be having a Ontario East versus West game at Fletcher's Field. Jamie, from a coaching perspective, what are you looking for to from the East Coast Rugby Championship to then be able to select players for this East versus West game later this year?
So we're trying to provide game opportunities for as many players as possible. So it may be quite foreign to a lot of coaches in that, and I struggle to say this, but it's ultimately long-term is what we need to do. We're not actually trying to win. If we do our structures right, if we play properly, we will win our game. But that's not the full focus. The full focus is having game experience for more players, just like we did with the coaches. More coaches getting upskilled, coaching more players grows the game. And this, having more kids play at a better level, grows their game IQ, grows their game understanding. And then at the end of it all, once we've had all these kids come through all these different games, then we get to a blue versus white game. Then now we're talking about winning. We're going back to the coast to coast to try to defend our title. Okay. So, but what we're really focusing on here now is numbers and learning and good game experience. Because, you know, as we've said, we need to grow the game. We need to grow the amount of players who can play at this level, which we're looking for, like a provincial level, a little bit higher level than club. And, you know, hopefully these kids will go on to somewhere, maybe the Pride, maybe into Sevens, maybe into an MLR team, you know, wherever it is their opportunities come or arise from, we're going to support that. You know, whether they go overseas or they will go somewhere else in North America, this is great because that's just a win for us, because then there's somebody else younger coming on along the conveyor belt who's, you know, getting another game opportunity. So, you know, it is a little foreign probably to hear from a coach to say we're not exactly looking to win right now, but ultimately we're trying to grow this base of good, young, competitive rugby players.
And just to add there, you know, when Jamie talks about growing the game, you know, sort of to put a point on that, you know, part of what we're doing with the larger squad is also understanding that we don't want to, nor can we just pull guys from the club game and say, you're just playing with us this summer. So the guys will be in and out of the squad. Our training sessions are intentionally off of club nights. So we're going Mondays and Wednesdays. So all the players are registered with an Ontario club. The expectation is that if they're not physically with us, they're training with their club. If they're not on our 23, they're playing club that weekend. All of these kids need more minutes, which so the effort there is to really make sure that we don't decimate any one club. We actually work together, because if we can have more engaged rugby players between the ages of 18 to 24 still aspiring towards something, they're still playing club. If they're not with us, we're going to raise the level of the local club game as well. So that's a really intentional part of what we're looking to do with the program here.
I kind of feel like you might have just answered this question, but it was something I was kind of curious about, though, in saying like you want to try to get more people or more players, more game time. Is there like for like the game against the Atlantic Privateers and any of those are just like 23 normal 23 man rosters, or are you guys playing with like, you know, expanded to like 30, like some pro teams have done in like exhibition games and stuff?
No, so we've had our larger squad games already, and those were in our two preseason games. But now, as Tim said, we need to be mindful of the club opening weekend. So we'll run with a 24 game day 24, and the rest of those kids will be obviously available to play with their club teams on the weekend. You know, we don't want to ring fence anything or, you know, tell people what they can or cannot do. We're here to provide a better game experience. And if we do a good job as coaches, the kids will come back. And that's what they've been doing. So, you know, as Tim said, we're not trying to disrupt club season because we're only going till the middle of June. And then after that, everybody's going to be back in club land. So yeah, we front ended it as part of the season, so it doesn't really affect things too much. The clubs, for all sense of purposes, have been very, very positive. And just the fact that, you know, we've got this open exchange with the coaches, we've already been out, you know, coaching with them. It's been a hugely positive experience so far.
So if you have players that are like, say, like don't make the 24 and are playing like club, like playing for their club elsewhere on the weekend, how do you kind of like evaluate like their performance at their club while like, I would say, simultaneously coaching an Arrows Academy game on like the same weekend? How does that whole process work for you guys?
So most of the games are now recorded. Most clubs have video cameras or they throw it up on YouTube. So yeah, we're watching a lot of video and we get feedback from the coaches, as I said. So, you know, it's just constant feedback loops, talking with the players as well. You know, I probably 25 minutes after training tonight, talking guys about, you know, who's going where, you know, look out for this. You were really good last weekend, you know, feedback loops with the players and with the coaches. So, you know, it's a lot of communication. It's a lot of work, but it's ultimately extremely important.
Always good to keep tabs on all your players and make sure that, like you say, they're getting the game time and better game experience as it goes on. So we talked about phase one, which you guys are currently about to start. We got phase two, the East versus West game. And then we got the big one in phase three, the Coast to Coast Cup. Like you said, Jamie, looking to retain the cup or anchor, I think is what it actually is. And it was announced by the Atlantic Privateers that the Prairie Fire will be in the competition this year. Also on top of that is that the Atlantic side are no longer the selects. They're the privateers now. So the competition is changing. So from what you know, how is the Coast to Coast Cup shaping up this year?
Well, for me, I've had some great conversations with the different coaching staffs that are building towards the Coast to Coast. Where I'm regularly in contact with Dr. Gillis, kind of the godfather of everything out east. Obviously, that'd be hotly contested by the Parfrey family as well. But in Halifax, Dr. Gillis has got his hands in many different pies and does an enormous amount for the game. We're obviously in regular contact and building and organizing and making sure that we can all put on a great event in the end of June, and we look forward to getting out there and hopefully being successful again.
And I think also too, just in terms of the tournament itself, it's the third year that it's been run, so each year there's a little bit more that's added to it because you started planning a little bit earlier and you're correcting the things or sort of touching up the things that you would have done differently if you had more time. So, from a planning perspective, community events, community support and awareness of this is upcoming. There'll be some youth events around it. Sponsors are on board. I would say, knowing that it's going to be streamed, MLRGMs have this on their calendar that these will be games that they'll want to be watching. So just from a planning perspective, the maturity of the tournament itself, the competition is just that much higher from years past.
So earlier on, Tim, you mentioned that you played in like the Super League like 20 years ago, and that had some, I guess, well, it doesn't exist anymore, so it had some viability like issues and stuff. So I guess kind of a two-part question. How important is it to have like an elite level competition like the Coast to Coast Cup that brings teams together from like across the country? And secondly, how do you ensure that that's a viable competition that can be looked at as an annual thing and can continue on into the future?
Yeah, I mean, looking to the future is always a tough one, but I would say, in terms of these competitions, having a trophy or a cup or a piece of wood with tinfoil around it, wrapped around it, matters, like playing for something, right? So, and I think that, the longer things like this can go, the more momentum and the more significance they can take on. So that's what I've seen with the Coast to Coast Cup. We talked about New England, and Stu, you mentioned some of the other, MLR Academy sides. There have been inquiries about how they can be a part of this because friendlies and exhibition games really only get you so far. It's tough to do a league just based on the cost structure that introduces at a level. So we do have to be mindful of that at this level. But if you think of it as like, junior hockey type thing, if you could build some type of regional Memorial Cup or something along those lines where there's regional qualifiers and you play up to something, I think that's something that has legs. But again, I would still go back to the local underpinnings of each of the teams. I think the lesson, from my perspective, the lesson that's been learned is you need the franchises before you need the league. And so I think if we can continue down this path where we're helping to entrench franchises, the leagues and the competitions will form off of that. But trying to say that you need to start with six teams and not arbitrarily, but just sort of picking teams that have to be in it is a bit, I think it's the reverse order. So the way that we're going about it now, and the teams may change and they might change names and there'll be a little bit of adjustment, but it's still ultimately happening in the region with the same players. Maybe the jersey's a little bit different, but they're playing towards something that's meaningful.
So I think for those of us that are watching the game from Toronto, the first game of the Coast to Coast Cup last season, visibility was an issue with the fog rolling in, which I think gave the Atlantic Selects a bit of a unfair advantage. But then again, it's home field advantage, so you make do with what you can. So I don't know if that's included in your training schedule, Jamie, of how to play to those kind of conditions. But obviously, this season you'll be going to Syracuse as well. There's the final of the East Coast Rugby Championship in Quebec on the 2nd of June. So for these guys going to all these, or having the opportunity, I should say, to go to all these locations and experience rugby in a different part of both Canada and North America, what has been the feedback to you guys, both from the kids that taking part, as well as, their parents or the support structure as well?
Maybe take that, Tim. For us, it's been extremely positive on the rugby side of things. Obviously, there's the complications with distance, hence why we kind of tried to go east and west of the GTA. We had a couple of kids at the beginning kind of trying to cross the GTA and around rush hour, and it was taking them 2, 3 hours to get to training, and that's not fair on anybody. So we really tried to, to stop that and have, kind of roving training sessions that are in areas that are easier to for the boys to get to, and girls. We've had girls out at our training sessions as well. And for me, everybody's invited to our training sessions. The fact that we've kind of had these roving sessions, and those that could make it have come out. It's been hugely positive returns, not just from players, but from coaches and parents. It's as Tim said, we're kind of building as we fly. But in the future, we'll definitely try to refine things. We'll have communication out earlier. Our training venues will be locked down ahead of time. But I think it's been positive from the get-go.
Yeah, and I think if we hit on our, one of the things we aim to do is to offer more for those who are looking for more. So when you ask about the parent question or the athlete who's, 22 and, they're sort of done with most age grade stuff and they've perhaps finished a degree or a diploma, what's next? Where do I play next? We can keep them engaged. What we want to really avoid is anyone feeling stretched or torn between programs, right? So we worked very collaboratively with the Canada Under 20 side and their programming, what they're doing right now to prepare for their two tests against the United States. We don't want, a 19-year-old, worst case scenario is a 19-year-old is sort of betwixt and between and doesn't know where to go and get stressed out. So we're trying to make sure that we offer the what's next or where can I go, providing a clear pathway, but without, and certainly without confusing anybody across programs.
Yeah. So as you guys kind of look forward, obviously the game against the Atlantic Privateers this weekend, full season ahead. What in both of your minds, maybe from like Tim from like the off-field stuff, Jamie, obviously the on-field stuff, what is like a successful like 2024 for the Toronto Arrows Academy look like to you guys?
So for mine, I'll let Jamie sort of wrap up with the fun stuff, which is the rugby side and really why we're all here. But I think what the Arrows really started to prove was that there's a market for live sporting entertainment that's affordable and accessible to families. Look, I love the Toronto sports teams as much as anybody, but I can't take my family there without sort of some serious financial planning, right? If we're going to go down to a game. So success for us is if we can put a product on the field that's, live entertainment, but also that families can realize that they can go to and have a different experience that won't break the bank. That's a big success for us because at the same time, that's something that's appealing to potential sponsors and folks who want to be a part of the program from a support perspective. So I think for me, that's the big one is that if we can sort of prove that out. That there's something there, sort of that live game day experience, and then a team that you can root for, and as well as some other ways where you can be involved in the program. That's success for me coming out of this season.
No, that's and on the field, we just, as I said earlier, we want more kids having a good game experience and learning, you know, building that rugby IQ. As we know, a lot of guys and girls come to the game very late in Canada. So we're trying to accelerate that games-based learning so that ultimately they can be successful. You know, you're having fun, you're winning, you're going to want to keep going. So that's definitely what we are really pushing. So, you know, it's skills-based, you know, learning around, you know, proper foundations so that they can use their athletic abilities to be successful. So, you know, for us, more kids playing at a better level is success for us. And then, you know, once we get to the onto the field on Saturday, we want our kids to put out a good product. You know, good flowing rugby where we keep the ball alive and you know, aggressive on defense. And you know, if it's a win, that's great. It means that you know, they've done their job. If it's a loss, well, we're learning and they're learning and we're building for next week. So you know, ultimately, we want to have fun with it, and we want everybody to have a good experience and keep growing for the future.
All right. Well, we're definitely looking forward to seeing how the Academy does both this Saturday and for the season ahead. And if you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, make sure to check out more episodes as well as our written pieces on our website, therougerugby.ca. You can also find the podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We have our YouTube channel at The Rouge Rugby with episodes of the podcast. Make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all our videos. We are also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at The Rouge Rugby. So this game on Saturday, Tim, Jamie, what do people need to know about this game? How can they get to it? When's the kickoff?
2 p.m. kickoff at Crescent School, just north of Lawrence on Bayview Avenue in Toronto. So just south of the 401 or just north of the Bayview Extension, depending on which part you're coming from.
And no entry fee, right?
No entry fee. Thank you, Derek. Yes.
That's the best part, though. That's the best part.
Come on out and check out the game. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Derek, where can people find you on social media?
At Brissette the Jet across all social media, and I guess at Crescent School around 2 o'clock on Saturday. So that'll be a good time, guys.
Right on.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spelled HFORDMAN. Well, Tim, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. Derek, as always, thanks for joining me. And thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.